This is Tooncast, Episode 2, Animaniacs, recorded June 10th, 2009. This is TFG1 Mike from the Geekcast Radio Network. I would just like to say really quick that there were some audio issues. It was not as bad as the first recording that we did of Episode 2. It's significantly better now. Also, as a programming note, Geek of Todd will not be in this episode. He was going to be originally, but... for some odd reason, there was feedback on for us getting on his end. I don't know what it was. I'm not really sure. He will be back for some episodes in the future, though. So please enjoy Tooncast Episode 2.
It's time for Animaniacs, and we're zany to the max. So just sit back and relax. You'll laugh, you'll laugh. We're Animaniacs. Come join the Warner Brothers
and the Warner.
Just for fun, we run around the Warner movie lot. They lock us in the tower whenever we get caught. But we break loose and bend the moose, and now you know the plot. We're Animaniacs. Dog is cute and Yakko yaps. Wacko packs away the snacks while Bill Clinton plays the sax. We're Animaniacs. Meet Pinky and the Brain, who want to rule the universe. Put feathers flock together, Slappy laughs them with her purse. Martin chases Mindy, Marina sings a verse.
Welcome to Tooncast, Episode 2, The Animaniacs Redux, because, the first episode we recorded did not work out. I am TFG1 Mike, and I am joined by...
Boss K-Dog, Kevin.
And the Music Man, 08.
Yes, that's right. And we will be talking about Animaniacs, a very funny 90s cartoon. Let's see, where are we? I guess we can start with some general chat. We've had some audio issues. It's Skype, we found out. It's not anything that I did or that they did or whatever.
If there was an episode that we had to do twice, it should be the Animaniacs.
I'm not really sure. So I think we're just going to get straight into it, and we're going to go to the history lesson with the teacher.
All right. Good evening, cartoon nerds. This is Kevin, Professor Boss K-Dog, bringing you this week's history lesson. For episode 2, we travel back in time to 1993 for Steven Spielberg Presents Animaniacs. The Animaniacs was a Warner Brothers production, which aired in half-hour installments, sometimes consisting of one single half-hour cartoon, but more commonly consisting of two or three shorter cartoon components, a la Pinky and the Brain and others. And it could be seen in both weekdays and Saturday morning time slots, just dependent on which year you were watching it. The show premiered on Fox on September 13th, 1993, and remained there until September 8th, 1995. It was then immediately picked up by the WB, where it aired from September 9th, 1995 to November 14th, 1998. It has since been rebroadcast on numerous occasions by the WB, where it was seen as part of the Cat and Birdie, Warner Toonie, Pinky Brainy, Big Cartoony show, the Cartoon Network, Nicktoons, and obviously various other outlets. After all was said and done, the Animaniacs had lasted for 5 hilarious seasons and had given us a grand total of 99 memorable episodes. And not that everyone doesn't know this anyways, but just to give a quick snapshot of the premise of the show, the Animaniacs was the successor to, in a slightly more adult version of, the wildly popular Steven Spielberg Presents Tiny Toon Adventures. The Animaniacs, Yakko, Wacko, and Dot, were three bizarre characters created in the 1930s by Warner Brothers star animator Tex Avery, kinda. However, their starring cartoons were so crazy out of control and incoherent that no theater wanted to book them. Embarrassed, the studio locked them up in the famous Warner Brothers Studio Water Tower. The show picks up in the 1990s when the trio finally escapes from the tower and follows them as they run rampant at the studio, getting into mischief and creating havoc every day. Or should I say, every episode. All right, now that we have the background info, let's move on to the rest of the episode. This has been the Professor, and class is dismissed.
Yes. I wonder what Wacko has to say about this. this was going into the general memories recollections section here. This was something that I was, when fads start, generally if it's like just everywhere, like Pokemon and crap like that, I tend to go the other way, and this is one of those. I did not get into Animaniacs until very late after it was pretty much off general airing, when it was in syndication. But I mean, I have the DVDs now of the ones that are available, and I have to be in the mood to watch it. But when I do watch it, I really enjoy what I see.
Yeah, I have to agree with a couple things you just said there. First of all, that Pokemon and stuff like that is crap. But secondly, I too kind of shied away from Animaniacs at the beginning. I'm going to blame it on my age at that point. I was to the point where I was starting to focus on sports or girls or this or that. And I remember I had a friend that was 1 year younger than me, pretty much my best friend at the time. And every time I went over to his house, he was watching Animaniacs. And it's not that I disliked the show, but I just got tired of that's all he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of got turned off of it for a while until I really had forced to watch enough episodes where I started getting into it. But I do remember sitting at my best friend's house, and it was always me, him and his mom that were always watching it. And his mom would be laughing, and she could, repeat some of the lines, and she knew all the segments. So I always thought that was kind of bizarre. But after all, looking back at it, it is definitely one of those that does stand up to the test of time.
Yes, it very much is, actually. What's your memory of it, Dion?
Animaniacs for me was kind of I think in my book, probably one of the funniest damn animated shows out there, for the late 90s, early 90s to late 90s. And I would always get my mom and dad to, and they were in their 60s at the time, but they were always wanting my foster sister at the time, Deanna, to watch a healthy, wholesome cartoon instead of lasers and violence and this and that. And I happened to flip over to Animaniacs one day, and it just happened to be, the debuting of Animaniacs. And we all just sat there and laughed at it because they had very funny segments. They had educational segments. They had, of course, the music and everything in between. So it was a healthy family show. And, of course, there were catchphrases. And, of course, I know some of those catchphrases. And so did my foster sister at the time, but it was a lot. It was a good run. There were and still are in my book a lot of great memories, and this cartoon in my book will never get old.
Yeah, I agree, but I have to be in the mood to watch it, because some of the skits for me, they just I don't know. I just have to be in the right frame of mind.
You're always in the right frame of mind.
Yeah,
that.
Exactly. So I guess we can go on to the characters and the voice actors part of this. There were tons of famous people in this show. And I said in the previous recording that no one will hear because it's been scrapped. I actually didn't realize. Excuse me. At the time when I was making the schedule for the show for Tooncast, that Tiny Toons preceded this. And I should have put Tiny Toons as episode 2 and Animaniacs as episode 3, but, oh well.
More fun to do.
Yeah, we're always backwards around here anyways. So, yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, there's not that much that you can do.
Nope.
I think the first thing that we should talk about, if we're talking about characters and voice actors, we kind of touched on it a little bit, but in the last take, but exactly what the Animaniacs were. Were they dogs? Were they what
characters
exactly were they?
Characters that look like dogs and a cat. I mean, I don't know. People thought they were dogs.
I think that was the most commonly used explanation. I've never heard from the ones creating it, and I've never listened to all the interviews to see what they said, but I'm pretty sure it was supposed to be that kind of mysterious, not able to determine what they were type of a character. But what do you? I mean, Mike, you've listened to some of the interviews. Do they ever touch on that at all?
I don't really. I would have to go back and watch the writers' roundtable. I'm not sure. But it's funny. I actually just had a breakthrough thought of what they could be. Everybody here has seen Spaceballs, right?
Correct.
They're Moggs.
That's
right.
Half man, half dog.
That works
for me.
But yeah, I mean, even though they say it, I mean, the characters themselves, Yakko, Wakko, and Dot, say that they're not dogs in the cartoon. There is one episode where Wakko is sleeping and he's having a dream and he's like growling and kind of like barking and wagging his tail and all this. And he's like scratching himself and everything else. So, I mean, right. Yeah, I think they're dogs.
I mean, I know
It does.
I know they were supposed to be, you know, this 1930s feel, and so they're modeling them after, you know, Felix the Cat and Oswald the Rabbit and stuff like that. But, you know, those characters were, you know, definite animals. Yeah. So it was just kind of odd that they kind of left it this, you know, ambiguous, maybe it's a dog, maybe it's a not. But I guess that adds to the maniac of Animaniacs.
Yes.
It adds to the mystery, I think.
Yeah.
Very much so. As I said before, there were a ton of voice actors in this. A lot of them came over from Tiny Toons. One of the reasons why, and we'll get to this when we get to Tiny Toons, but one of the reasons why Charlie Adler did not even go to this series was because he felt jaded that they offered the lead role to Rob Paulsen, because at the time, Paulsen did do like additional voices in Tiny Toons. He was also, I think he was the dog, the big German bulldog, or the white dog.
I think.
Yeah, yeah, he was that voice, but Rob Paulsen back then was a virtual unknown. I mean, he wasn't as supposedly as famous as Charlie Adler, and Adler was just very jealous, so he didn't come over to the show.
I got to say, though, Rob Paulsen, if I had to pick one voice actor that was my favorite in Animaniacs, it's him. So I guess I'm kind of glad that they did that, because, I mean, Rob Paulsen is far and away my favorite voice actor in the whole cast.
Yeah.
I think Rob made Yakko.
Yeah.
He made Pinky, too.
And I think he made Pinky, too.
Yeah, he did. He made, but what I'm saying for the Warner Brothers side, you know, for Animaniacs, you know, for the Warners, he made that Yakko role stick.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that Charlie Adler and Rob Paulsen were kind of at war, so to speak. I agree with Kevin. I think that, you know, it's a good thing that Rob did take that role, because I don't think Charlie would have really been able to do it. But I think Rob made that role stick. It made Yakko what he is today, who he is today. And every kid, when they watch Animaniacs, they know, hey, that's Yakko. Or if they see Rob Paulsen doing some skit, you know, funny skit, and somebody asks him about Animaniacs, you know, he can do that voice. I've actually seen videos of him on YouTube, and they will actually ask him to do voices, you know, that voice as well as Pinky's voice.
And
when the audience, of course, hears that, they go crazy.
Right. While we're still on Rob Paulsen, I know you guys already know this, but some interesting facts just for the listeners. He is always called in for Jim Carrey movies whenever Jim Carrey's not around, especially when they're doing the dub to bring it to television. Like if they have to edit stuff out from the original movie, they call Rob Paulsen in to do the edits for, because he did the voice for Jim Carrey in the cartoon version of The Mask. He did, you might recognize him or maybe not, but he was Raphael from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for about 9 years. Played a couple different small roles in G.I. Joe and Transformers, nothing really notable. Of course, my favorite casting credit for him, that he played in the episode Ugly Duckling of MacGyver, he appeared as his live-action version, so that's awesome. And the weird twist to all of our voice actors, the Land Before Time connection. Rob Paulsen plays Spike in the Land Before Time, most of the Land Before Time movies, which has a connection to Jeff Bennett, who played Petrie, and Trace McNeil, who played Petrie's mom. So we have a trio of Land Before Time voice actors, whether that's
been it actually should be noted, Paulsen and McNeil, they both had previously very good voiceover careers. Jess Harnell was a musician that came in and auditioned. I don't think he had any other previous voice acting. I think Animaniacs was his first show. And with Wacko, he wanted to go for an Elvis type of sound, but when he saw the character, he figured it was more of a Beatles type, and that's where the Wacko voice comes from.
So and all you
there were two versions of the Wacko sound. There were two versions of the Wacko sound. It's noted in the interview that he starts out very high, kind of a high pitched Wacko voice, and then the voice director, asks him, hey, can you drop that a little bit lower, but still keep that British accent? And so that's what he did. And there you go.
And for all the sci-fi and the cartoon nerds out there, you've heard Rob Paulsen. You've heard Jess Harnell recently. If you've watched the last Transformers live action.
Oh yeah, that's right. He was Ironhide.
That's right.
And something else.
Ironhide and Barricade. So Ironhide and Barricade from the Transformers, the 2007 live action movie. So you've heard him recently.
Ah, yes, we have.
Well, I think there's a couple other.
Go ahead, Kevin.
I just want to say I think there's a couple other voice actors that we should probably make a note on. I think you're going to probably get to one of them, so I'll let you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, in the first episode of Tooncast, we were talking about the Nintendo cartoons, but I'm going to bring up one in particularly. The Super Mario Brothers Super Show, where Maurice LaMarche had small roles in the Super Mario Brothers show. Of course, he also portrays Brain in the Animaniacs.
Yeah, and I don't think we had mentioned that when we were talking about the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, but to piggyback on that trivia fact, he also in the Super Mario Brothers Super Show played the voice of Inspector Gadget, which gives us another
right.
little ironic twist because he was also in the original Inspector Gadget as Chief Quimby. So Maurice LaMarche is the
yes,
man.
And also in Animaniacs, he.
I also saw him at a. What are those comedy deals?
Comic Con.
No, he's talking about Comic Con.
And he was also another. We talked about some carryovers from Tiny Toons. He was also obviously in Tiny Toons as Dizzy Devil. You may have heard him in Captain Planet as Verminous Scum, or in any of the Ghostbusters.
I didn't know that was him.
Yeah,
either.
And in any of the Ghostbusters, it doesn't matter. It could be real Ghostbusters, Extreme Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters, and the Slimer one. He was Dr. Egon Spengler, and
yes,
all those.
Yes, he was.
Yes, he was.
As far as Animaniacs goes, he was also Squit or whatever the hell the Goodfellas name is.
Oh,
yeah.
I forgot about that.
Just the voice cast on this show. I mean, you've got tons of people. Bernadette Peters. She was not actually the original role of Rita. The original person to play it, but they wanted to bring in, because this show is so musical, we need to bring that up. It is very musical in nature. And she brought that really.
Bernadette wasn't, like you said, Mike, they had somebody else, but I guess at the last minute, she dropped out.
Yep.
So unfortunately, we will never know who the original voice of Rita the Cat would have been.
Yep.
Wait. Just going down the list of a couple of people we haven't mentioned, you had Frank Welker. We didn't really talk too much about Jeff Bennett, but he's also recently been in the Transformers Animated as Prowl. You had someone from that you mentioned the first time that I had forgotten something about.
Oh yeah, Tom Baudet from Motel 6.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. You have Ron Perlman.
See, I didn't know that. I didn't know about Ron Perlman. I was like, wait, what?
And it lists it on IMDb. It lists Corey Burton as doing a couple additional voices too. So I don't know which ones they would have been, but that's another famous person that was involved.
Yeah. I mean, there's tons of people, just tons and tons.
I had a quick question for you. Kind of still on the voice actors, but more so just the character standpoint. For both you and Dion, who, if you had to pick a favorite character, who would it be?
I'll let Dion go because I have to think.
You got one, Dion?
There's so many of them.
Well, you both are thinking. I think it's a tie for me between Yakko and Pinky for me. I mean, yeah, I guess it's both the same same person that's doing them, but for some reason that I didn't know that when I was a kid. Obviously, I didn't know who's voicing who, and I had no clue that it was the same person, but I just really liked Yakko and Pinky both there. The way the voice was done, the character, I just liked everything.
Rob Paulson fanboy.
my least favorite character when I was a kid was probably Katie.
Yeah, I didn't like Katie either. Oh, Katie was horrible.
Yeah, I didn't like her. I would say Wacko and Buttons, because I felt so bad for Buttons.
Yeah.
Buttons.
I did. I felt so bad for him. I felt so bad for Buttons just because Mindy's this little kid, but yet she gets into mischief, and they think Buttons is the one who is, you know, doing all the mischief, and it isn't. And then, of course, to hear Frank Welker say, bad, bad dog.
And the other thing it should be noted about Welker, I mean, we all know that Frank Welker is a voice acting god. I mean, he pretty much invented the fucking art of voice acting, as far as I'm concerned, but, I mean... It's just the way it is. He has voiced every animal in almost anything that's been animated ever. And
he's also...
Well, no, I know he has. Well, Runt talks. But, I mean, as far as animal sounds, that's the person that...
Oh, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I don't think anything could touch
No, him. Not at all. But he plays... I think he plays pretty much every animal in this show.
That wouldn't surprise me.
I don't know either, but I think he does. I'm not really sure. Yeah, it kind of does. As far as my favorite character, I really can't pick one. I think my favorite part about Wacko, and we didn't really mention this in take one, which we really need to talk about, is his gag bag. I loved that. He always had the gag bag around.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, that's... I like that as well. I remember that actually.
Yeah.
That was great.
I think the best episode is I forget what the title is. It's where Scratch and Sniff has gone to get him, and Mr. Plotz wants to see him, and they get stuck in the elevator. And Dr. Scratch and Sniff is like, Wacko, do something about this. Take something out of your gaggy bag. I didn't bring it. It's at home. You always bring it everywhere. Why didn't you? I don't know. I just didn't bring it. But, yeah, I mean, the gag bag, yeah,
funny.
And the other thing that was funny about, not that episode, but just another a whole gag bag deal was, it's potty time, or I got a potty or whatever, where all three of them are in the movies, and he has to go to the bathroom, and he can't find anywhere to go to the bathroom. Yes.
Potty,
that's what it's called, potty emergency. Yes, exactly.
Potty emergency. I have to potty. What? I have to potty. What?
Yeah.
I have to potty.
And then he starts going through the gag bag. I know I have a potty in here somewhere. It's just hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was just so funny. Yeah.
I think the only person we didn't really mention too much on, I'll just give her a shout out real quick. I didn't necessarily love Dot, which was done by Trace McNeil, obviously. But I will say that I liked her version of Dot better than, which we'll get to next week, her version of Babs Bunny. For some reason, I was a bigger fan of Dot than Babs. So
yeah, but if you listen, it's the same voice. It's the same.
I know it's
kind
the same
of...
voice, but it was just, I don't know, it was something with the inflections or the way that it was done.
No, because if you listen to both, it's the same thing. But the difference between, I can tell you the difference between the two. Dot was kind of a whiny type voice.
Well, you also have to look. Go ahead,
I was going to say, Dot was kind of a whiny type voice, whereas Babs was kind of more of a grown up voice. Because when I first heard Dot, I thought they put her on some type of helium. I did! I mean, I was a kid, so I don't, you know, obviously when I was a kid, I'm not going to figure, how the hell do they do those voices like that? Is she sucking down helium the whole entire show?
She kind of sounded like that in some of her roles in Chippendales, too. Chippendales Rescue Rangers, not Chippendales the Dance.
Yeah, she did.
with Chip and Gadget and Zipper. She had a couple of those that were kind of that same same sound. Right. I don't know. It's just something about Dot. Maybe it was the lines that they were given Dot compared to
Babs.
I think
it was the lines.
Well, the other thing you have to look at is the fact that Dot is supposed Dot, Wacko, and Yakko are all supposed to be, you know, kids. They're supposed to be, you know, 9, 10, 8, 9, 10, 11, you know, 12, you know, preteens. And Babs and Buster and all of them are supposed to be close to, like, early teens. So you really have to look at that. And I didn't even, I mean, I kind of knew that Tress did Babs, but I wasn't really, because I've been watching I've been watching the DVDs for next week, but just the range of voices, like in that first episode, A Loony Beginning, she's asking Buster about what voice would she, and she goes through like a whole list of voices, and I didn't even know that was Tress MacNeille, and of course it is. Do we have anything else to say about the cast or the voicing?
Nope, I'm good.
Well, besides Animaniacs, Trez also appears in.
Oh, yeah,
Simpsons.
That's right. All right. Well, we are going to now go into the creators, writers, producers, animation, behind the scenes. And before we do that, I would like to point out one quick thing. Most people do not know this. Everybody always asked Jess Harnell about the burping with Wacko and the great Wackerotti. And in a behind-the-scenes clip that I grabbed, this is what he has to say about it.
I'm gonna give you another Animaniac secret, though. This is revealed for the first time publicly. Everybody always wanted to talk to me on those signing things about the burping. Everybody was always like, you know, when you burp, do you have to drink a lot of soda? And I go, well, you know what's really funny? I have a stunt burper. Because right. I did, because, you know. You
and
would,
who is it?
My stunt burper is the best in the business, and it's that gentleman right there.
Right.
And I don't want to, Mo, I don't want to put you on the spot, and you're so well-dressed and handsome.
Not
today.
At all.
But if you wouldn't mind, Mo, would you give us a little example of the magic you used to do on my behalf?
Go to zero.
It takes a second to warm
center,
up.
Center, Mo.
Isn't that great?
That is a thing of beauty.
And the
gross,
and,
but
and I didn't even know that. I thought that was just Jess doing it, but I didn't even know that at all.
Well, what I thought they used to do was like tape him, you know, record different tracks of him burping and then mix it
all
together.
Andrea Romano, who is the voice and casting director, most of her voice sessions and anything she's ever done, it's been an ensemble cast. Unless they couldn't get the actor to come to the studio, they would do it by satellite. But most of her voice sessions from all the DVDs and stuff that I've seen her on, it's been an ensemble cast. And I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that casting room on a day that they were doing a great Wackerotti session, because I'm a exactly.
Oh, I bet there were tons.
Because
of
I am betting, I am very much betting that they had Jess Harnell doing the voice stuff, and then Mo sitting right across from him, or down the line from him, doing the burping. I'm betting they did it simultaneously.
Yeah, and there's just too many outtakes.
Oh, very much
so. Some serious outtakes of that stuff. I would love to just
much so.
I bet Maurice. I bet. Maurice
oh, I'm sure. It just sounds sick. Wait, does it? I mean, that's just, it's sounds like he's dry heaving.
It's not natural.
So who do you want to read the creation part, Kevin?
Sure. The Animaniacs cast characters, variety inspiration, from celebrities to writers, family members, to other writers. Steven Spielberg said that the reverence in Looney Tunes cartoons inspired the Animaniacs cast. The general premise of Animaniacs and the Warner siblings were created by Tom Ruger, who also came up with the concept and characters of Pinky and the Brain. Ruger was also senior producer and creative leader of the show. And he modeled some of the personalities after his own three sons. Besides that, because the Warners were portrayed as cartoon stars from the early 30s, Ruger and the other artists made the images as similar as they could to characters of the 1930s that we mentioned a little bit before, but you should see similarities between the Animaniacs, the way they're drawn and animated, and the characters like Felix the Cat, Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, and very early versions of Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, he also, Ruger, his son plays Skippy. And it says on here, Tom Ruger created Pinky and the Brain after being inspired by the personalities of two of his Tiny Toon Adventures colleagues, Eddie Fitzgerald and Tom Minton. Ruger thought of the premise of Pinky and the Brain when he wondered what would happen if Minton and Fitzgerald tried to take over the world. And then it goes on to say stuff about Sherry Stoner, who was a writer on the show. She created the voice of Slappy the Squirrel. And another writer, friend of Stoner, John McCann, made fun of Stoner's career in TV and movies playing troubled teenagers. And I think they really hit the nail on the head with Slappy. Sherry said on the DVD that, she, you know, cartoon characters never age. She wanted to make an old
Was she in the Tiny Toons? Was she in?
I don't know
Tiny
if
Toons,
she voiced.
Curiosity.
Yeah, she was involved with it. I don't know if she was any voices, well, but she was definitely.
I don't think she did.
It.
I'm not sure. I'd
she
have
was
to
involved.
Look.
I didn't know if she did a voice.
But in creating Slappy, she wanted to create an old cartoon character who could make all kinds of references to classic actors, actresses, and you know, times of you know, in times of like 30s and 40s and stuff like that. And I thought that was a really great way to, you know, give a different cartoon character.
Right.
She was looking at Slappy and she was trying to figure out if she did that voice, what kind of voice she would have, you know, Slappy would have. And when she did that, I thought, yep, pure New York. Because that's what she sounds like, is someone from New York or Brooklyn.
She is listed as a voice at all.
She portrayed that role really well. Say that again, Kevin.
I'm sorry. She is not listed at all as any voices from Tiny Toons, just as a writer.
Oh, okay. Okay. No, but she, as Slappy
yes,
Squirrel,
very much so.
Well.
As far as the production, we all know Spielberg was the executive producer during the entire run. Ruger was the senior producer. Gene McCurdy was the executive in charge of production. There's a whole bunch of names from the early 90s. Actually, I think the entire Animaniacs crew is probably a majority of the old Tiny Toons crew as well.
Right.
Andrea Romano said that Spielberg also came up with story ideas, read storyboards, and came to recording sessions, which I think that's great. I mean,
yeah, I think that's something that makes Spielberg
exactly.
who he is. He's not just someone that's going to, you know, slap his name on something. He's going to get involved. And everybody that you read, you know, or interviews that you see about whether it's Tiny Toons or Animaniacs, he was involved with everything. He wasn't just coming in and walking through. He was checking scripts. He was approving shows. He was giving his own
ideas.
Yes,
he was actually I think it was one of the very first episodes where the Warners go to Rome, and they go to the Sistine Chapel, and they have to help Michelangelo paint the ceiling, and Michelangelo keeps going on, oh my god, His Eminence is going to be here, and you know, we go to the end of the episode, and it's an animated version of Spielberg with him doing, I believe he did his own voice, I think he did, I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's impressive, and what's even more impressive if you consider the time frame we're at, because this is when this is like in the same time period that Steven Spielberg is doing Jurassic Park. So, and, you know, and Sequest on TV, amongst other projects, and he's, you know, those are huge overtakings, and to still be as involved as he is in just a little simple cartoon show, as it, you know, is usually perceived, I
yes,
think
very much
a lot
so.
To how much he wanted this to be a success.
There's one other character that I do not know his name, but he isn't an Animaniacs, but he was very,
oh,
very funny.
Yes, I don't know who did that Laven. Voice. I don't know, but
what
I think this
name?
Is what you're talking about.
Bark, woof, bark, Freund Leven.
I don't. I think it was.
That is exactly what we're talking about.
I don't know the actual character name. I mean, in that scene, in that little clip, he is a director on a movie that the Warners come in and kind of just take over. But.
Right.
Yeah, there's exactly. If I had to bet, I would say it was Lamarcher or Paulson or somebody.
Unless.
Yeah. Actually, who is it?
Unless there is a character listed. As
oh
Mr.
yeah,
director.
That's right. He was one of the writers.
It's Paul yeah. Rugg. I'm not familiar with.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it was one of the
Mr.
writers.
Mr. Director for 8 episodes.
Yep.
Paul Rugg did that. Okay. I always wondered who was behind that voice, because when, you know, like Mike was mentioning, the Warners come in and take over this movie, it was very hilarious.
Yes, very much so.
There were so many funny, you know, just moments in it.
Yeah.
getting back into the
puppy. Goodbye, old screamer.
Going back into the behind the scenes, something we didn't really touch on the first time around, but going into the actual writing, there's some quotations and some lines from some of the people that were involved. From one of the writers, Peter Hastings, says, "We weren't really there to tell compelling stories. As a writer, you could do a real story if you wanted to. You could recite the Star Spangled Banner. You could parody a commercial. You could do all these kinds of things." And they had tremendous freedom to do basically whatever they wanted to as writers. So I think
yes.
that's something really
actually, it's funny. I didn't really go into this either. As far as the writers for the series wrote... Yeah, they wrote episodes that happened to them, stories that happened to them. Ups and Downs, Survey Ladies, and I Got Your Can were episodes based on true stories that happened to Paul Rugg, Deanna Oliver, and Sherry Stoner, respectively. Another episode, Bumby's Mom, both parodied the film Bambi, and was a story based on Stoner's childhood reaction to that film, Bambi. Which we didn't cover.
Fade out. We get the joke.
Trying to see here. No, I don't think so. I didn't grab any beforehand. I don't. Nope.
Another thing about the writers that could separate it from some of the other shows, at least that I'm familiar with, is you had a lot of shows where just a writer would take over one episode and that was his or her episode, and they did everything about it. Maybe not true with all cartoons, but a lot of the ones I've seen, that's the case that it was. And Animaniacs, it talks about how they could collaborate if they were, you know, struggling with an ending. They would, you know, go to another writer, get their advice. So it seems like there was a lot more teamwork on this, and it wasn't just...
Yeah, there were multiple writing credits in each episode.
This one's doing another episode. So I think that helps, right, too.
Well, computer animation hadn't really come into play yet, I don't think. I know for a fact, and this is kind of off topic, but I know for a fact that computer animation didn't really go into as far as Warner Brothers using it until like late 95, 96, because Bruce Timm and them, who did the DC Animated Universe, started using computer animation on the later seasons and episodes of Superman, the animated series. So, yeah, I think this was all hand-drawn.
Well, another thing that is off topic, the Super Mario
was it really?
Super Show and any Nintendo stuff that we ever saw was computer done. It was never hand drawn. Yes, it was computer animated. If you look very closely, it is computer animated. If you look at the way, for example, Super Mario, the way he walks, if you notice a bit of a jerky walk with him, that's computer. It's computer drawn.
Touching on, since we're on, we kind of moved on to the animation part, it is important to note that Animaniacs was a very costly animated project, and it was a much higher standard of animation than most of the cartoons you would have been watching in the 90s or beforehand. The cell count's very, very much higher, and definitely a lot more went into that. Steven Spielberg especially was one of the main people that was powering that through, he wanted it to be, you know, just about as perfect as he could get.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot
he
of
he was a perfectionist back then. I think he still is in my book. He
yeah,
is.
And I think the animation is one thing that he really keyed in on. He was involved in a lot of the different processes, but I think animation is the thing that he took the most.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And they actually, over the course of the show's production, they used several different animation studios, TMS, Star Toons, Wang Film Productions, which, wow, bad joke. Rough Draft Studios, Freelance Animators, New Zealand, and Acom. Most Animaniacs episodes, the segments were just character layouts and backgrounds were produced at Warner Brothers in California, while third-party companies did the animation and ink and paint work. More of the later Kids WB episodes were animated by Wang Film Productions and Acom. What?
Mike, speaking of
shut the hell up.
Productions, you have some of those, don't you?
God. Good thing this podcast is explicit.
Oh, my God!
And to kind of go back to Tiny Toons and Animaniacs' predecessors. About. Oh, crap. Wrong one. Damn it!
I heard some.
You smug son of a...
That's the first time I think it's been directed at me.
Yeah, well...
It won't be the last.
No, it probably won't be.
Yeah, it's usually directed at me, Kevin, so get your comments up while you can.
I think we're going to go to the actual show itself. It was on, you know, some people may not know this. It originally started on Fox Kids, and... the first 69 episodes were on there, and Yakko usually made fun of Fox, which everybody makes fun of Fox nowadays.
Now. Yeah, I was going to say now.
Yeah.
That was in Fox's early days, though, for some respects, as far as, if I'm remembering this right, for a lot of their programming, like cartoons and stuff.
When Fox was good. Fox
yeah.
sucks.
Yes, I believe they're very. I can't be for certain, but I believe their very first cartoon was The Simpsons, in 1989, and then.
Yeah, so they're fairly fresh onto the scene. So this is a huge deal for
them. Oh yes, very much so.
Mike.
What?
87.
Wrong. Wrong. It's 1989.
It's 87 because it was on the Tracy Ullman show.
Okay, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when the first season premiered on Fox. I'm not talking about the drawings Groner did in Tracy Ullman. I'm talking about when the show got picked up. It was December 20th, 1989.
Yes, but he was doing those back then too.
But I'm just saying it was Fox's first animation show. God damn it. You son of a bitch!
Now I just got real explicit.
You smug son of a...
Yeah. Well, I don't care. I mean, hell, I curse all the time anyway, so it doesn't fucking matter.
Going into this being a huge deal for Fox, not only was it, you know, really important that Animaniacs was successful, but some of the shows that it was going up against, it was a big deal, and it's... gained a lot because it was pretty much the second most popular show for children at the time.
People thought that Animaniacs would not survive, because a lot of people saw it and they were like, this is not going to last. This will last one season.
And I'm kind of glad.
Yeah, exactly.
I wish it would have been the most popular children's show at the time because I can't stand what was, but we'll just say that Animaniacs was the second most popular show. And that they made fun of the first most popular show.
Yes, very
show.
Much so.
Yes.
If you don't know what it is, you need to rewatch all the Animaniacs episodes.
And then they switched over to WB, Kids WB, from episode 70 to 99. Yeah. Wait, what?
Michigan
yeah,
J.
I know.
Frog. Wow.
Yeah, I know who Michigan J. Frog is.
No, I was saying just like, you know, I kind of missed that frog. I thought it was kind of. No, I did because okay, they have a singing frog. singing about the freaking Animaniacs, and then they
lost. True.
Let's see. Finally, in 1998, Animaniacs was canceled by the WB, led by executive Jamie Kellner, who has also been held responsible for the cancellations of Freakazoid and Pinky and the Brain. The last new Animaniacs episode was aired November 14th, 1998. Animaniacs was ended one episode short of having 100 episodes. Afterwards... that's...
Damn them all to hell!
That's too funny.
I think one thing we haven't talked about with the show is kind of next on our list. We should mention a little bit about some of the... You know, the recurring jokes, the catchphrases, the hallmarks, the humor, you know, the stuff that really made Animaniacs.
Yeah, I was going to get to that.
I was just trying to keep you from a couple things over the end of
the Yeah, I mean, there was tons of parodies in this show.
Yeah, it parodied everything, and you weren't safe. if you were out there, you were going to be parodied. And something we kind of mentioned the first episode, or the first take on this one is... At least how I looked at it, you were parodied or made fun of or whatever for one of two reasons, and it was either you were really bad, your show or whatever it is that they're parodying, or you were really good. If you were in the middle, they're probably not touching you, but if you're really bad or really good, you were on the Animaniacs at some point.
If you were really good,
yes, very much so. just some of the humor in the show was actually very dark sometimes. And usually,
only adults.
Exactly. And usually, Wacko would say after a certain line or something, he would say this.
Good night, everybody.
Which usually signified, yeah, exactly what it was. And that wasn't, you know, that's obviously not unintentional. They wanted this to be a little bit more of an adult show than Tiny Toons was, and they succeeded.
I mean.
Yeah, they did.
I mean, I think they're both very adult shows. I mean, if you go back and look at their, you know, where these both shows, the main influence came from, Looney Tunes. Looney Tunes was, we'll get into this once the Looney Tunes episode comes around. It's way episode down the line. and I did that for a specific reason. Anyway, you know, Looney Tunes was... The creators have said they made it for themselves. It's not for kids. It's for themselves. It's for grown-ups. And Animaniacs and Tiny Toons as well. You know, it does have the kid element, but it also has adult stuff.
Yeah, but I do think Animaniacs is definitely kicking it up a notch from Tiny Toons. They both have the adult, you know, parts, but Animaniacs is a little bit more.
Some
of their stuff.
But I think so. I think, too, though, they wanted it to stay around the kids' understanding, you know, the kids' comprehensions level. So that way, you know, obviously parents wouldn't be writing into the network, know, getting a lot of hate mail. And I'm actually glad that they did that, but I'm also glad in a sense that they kind of tuned it up, you know, turned it up a notch for adults, too. Of course, the other thing I want to mention is that Minerva Mink had a very, very small role in cartoon due to her
Minerva Mink had episodes that the network censors considered too sexually suggestive for the show's intended audience, for which she was soon de-emphasized as a featured character. In the case of Double Entendre, the planet song for the Yakko forgot Uranus, and Wacko comes in at the end and you forgot Uranus. And then, of course, Yakko would pop into the frame, usually saying goodnight, everybody. Go ahead.
Venus.
The goodnight, everybody, that kind of reminds me of going back up a little bit, some of the, you know, recurring catchphrases that we heard over and over and over again.
Made them funny.
Yeah. You had the... I think you have some of them, but the Hello Nurse, the Are You Pondering What I'm Pondering from Brain, and I know you don't have this one because you hate Pink in the Brain, but the G-Brain that Pinky always says, you know, that stuff was just awesome.
G-Brain, what are we going to do tonight?
I love that.
Yes, exactly.
The same thing that we always do every night, Pinky.
tried to take over the world. You know, I actually at one time, and I wish I still had the clip, but I actually had a clip where they actually screwed up that ending. It was an outtake. It was an actual outtake from a recording session.
That would be funny to hear.
And I'll have to get it. But my friends got it. But yeah, it was an very actual cool.
Yes, the this one here actually wanted that to be a homage to "What's Up, Doc" from Bugs. That's what it's supposed to be. Yep.
That was kind of their little
yes, it
I
was. The Animaniacs characters had personalities and character traits similar. Oh wait, I already read that part. Sorry. crap. I'm losing my.
That's all right. Read it again and then go into what you were going to say and then read it again.
In addition to the show's recurring Goodfellas segment was populated with characters based on characters from the 1990 WB film Goodfellas, an R-rated crime drama neither marketed nor intended for children, which I think they dumbed down the Goodfellas, Goodfeathers thing very well. It wasn't as violent other than, you know, Pesto always beating up Squid.
Right.
Well, yeah, but that's the way pigeons should be anyway.
Car.
Yeah, that's true.
Curse splat.
Something else that I really liked about
the pigeon feather anyone
was the whole fourth wall concept though that we talked about last time with the characters breaking the fourth wall. You know, making faces or talking to the audience. I thought that was cool. Even, you know, back, I can remember originally watching the show and thinking that was so cool that the characters on the show were actually interacting with me as a viewer. And obviously, you know, they're not actually doing it, but you just had the sense that they were actually, you know, speaking to you. You had Dot, you know, explaining her jokes to you. You had Yakko, making fun of the story, which was always kind of bizarre when you're watching it. You're like, you're making fun of your own story, but it's really cool. And then you had, you know, Slappy complaining about things in her segments. And I just thought the interaction between the characters and you and the way that they were breaking that mold and you know, doing that was really cool.
What I thought was very interesting was in one of the ending episodes, the credits, if you will, when the Warners pop out, before they pop out of the tower, actually they're at the top of the tower, but you don't see them. But Wacko's getting some stuff out of a bag, and then he creates this escalator that goes up to the tower, and the guard gets underneath the tower, and then you see an anvil come down and pop him on the head, and then the Warner Brothers tower.
Yeah, there was always.
And close the door.
You know, nice. We got to remember that this show, and I know this is slightly off the parodies and stuff like that, but I mean, the show was basically to, you know, from start to finish, it was trying to capture them to get them back in the tower after they escaped. At the end of every show, there was always some sort of gag, and this goes back to me talking about Wacko's gag bag. I remember one specific episode, they used a chair to get up there. Once they're up there, something else comes down on Ralph the guard, and then it goes back up to the water tower, and they just, all three of them just kind of like shrug their shoulders and go in. You know, we should also...
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can't catch us. We're smarter than you.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
But that's what made it cute. That's what interesting.
I think if I had to pick an overall my favorite Wacko moment, other than, you know, some of the more famous stuff that that Wacko did, was his birthday episode where him and both plots were scared to death of clowns, and just what he did to that clown was so hilarious.
Deanne, do you have a favorite episode or a favorite one of your favorite episodes?
I don't know the title of it, but it's when the Warner Brothers are getting some foreign investors, and they get this. They're gonna the investors, if they like the Warners and everybody, they're gonna give them $1 billion check. And at the end of the episode,
I remember that one.
The Warners run off with the check, and Scratch and Sniff. Dr. Scratch and Sniff is standing there waving, and Plots is like, "Hey, give me back my check! That's my check!" And you hear his voice fade out at the end.
Oh, yeah.
And they're running off with the $1 billion.
Nice.
And they're like, and and you before everything help, you know, before everything that I just described happens, you know, Yakko goes, you know, Doc, there's one thing that I've learned about this, and Scratch and Sniff goes, yeah, what's that? And Yakko goes, I don't know, but apparently it's worth $1 billion. I like that episode, and I think I like, there's a lot of episodes I like. I think I like HMS Yakko.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love that episode. That one's great.
I don't know if I don't think I have a favorite episode, but I have some favorite things that they would do or favorite segments. I like the episodes where the
the mixing up of the scripts. Episode. Yeah.
I really liked it when. Yeah, when you had people completely in the wrong script, you know, in the wrong skit, you had characters showing up, or just like the occasional walking by and being like, huh. I'm not in the right place. It just always kind of caught me off guard, and I'm like, that's awesome.
Wheel of Morality.
I like
Turn.
The Wheel Turn. Of Morality.
Do I have a Wheel of Morality? Let's see. What do I got? Let's see.
It's that time again.
So put cucumbers in our ears.
To make fun of the Disney Channel?
No, it's time to learn the day's lesson.
Yep.
And to find out what it is, we turn to the Wheel of Morality. Wheel of Morality, turn, turn, turn. Tell us the lesson that we should learn. Moral number 5. And the moral of today's story is... If you can't say something nice, you're probably at the Ice Capades.
That is so true.
Excuse me.
But yeah,
and then my
favorite plots line was this.
When will this insanity end?
Did that come through?
No,
damn it!
Try that again.
When will this insanity end?
Still nothing. That's it.
I like that.
Yeah.
One of us answers the phone, silly.
I know.
Time in!
I think we're gonna, unless we have anything else. Yeah.
Yeah, that's when the secretary gets sick.
Just my only other favorite thing about it, besides those skits that I said, you know, with the characters breaking the fourth wall and being in the wrong skits, my other favorite moments, which should be a nice
very much so, and I think we're going to get one of the songs out of the way now, because we'll have a discussion about it in a minute. And please, no talking during this song. I'd have to look that up. So, here is Yakko's World.
Now, the nations of the world, brought to you by Yakko Warner.
United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru, Republic, Dominican, Cuba, Caribbean, Greenland, El Salvador, too, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Venezuela, Honduras, Guyana, and still, Guatemala, Bolivia, then Argentina, and Ecuador, Chile, Brazil, Costa Rica, Belize, Nicaragua, Bermuda, Bahamas, Tobago, San Juan, Paraguay, Uruguay, Suriname, and French Guiana, Barbados, and Guam. Norway and Sweden and Iceland and Finland and Germany now one piece. Switzerland, Austria, Czechoslovakia, Italy, Turkey and Greece. Poland, Romania, Scotland, Albania, Ireland, Russia, Oman. Bulgaria, Saudi Arabia, Hungary, Cyprus, Iraq and Iran. There's Syria, Lebanon, Israel, Jordan, both Yemen, Kuwait and Bahrain. The Netherlands, Luxembourg, Belgium and Portugal, France, England, Denmark and Spain. India, Pakistan, Burma, Afghanistan, Thailand, Nepal, and Bhutan, Cambodia, Malaysia, then Bangladesh, Asia, and China, Korea, Japan, Mongolia, Laos, and Tibet, Indonesia, the Philippine Islands, Taiwan, Sri Lanka, New Guinea, Sumatra, New Zealand, then Borneo, and Vietnam, Tunisia, Morocco, Uganda, Angola, Zimbabwe, Djibouti, Botswana, Mozambique, Zambia, Swaziland, Gambia, Guinea, Algeria, Ghana. Burundi, Lesotho, and Malawi, Togo, the Spanish Sahara is gone. Niger, Nigeria, Chad, and Liberia, Egypt, Benin, and Gabon, Tanzania, Somalia, Kenya, and Mali, Sierra Leone, and Algeria, Dahomey, Namibia, Senegal, Libya, Cameroon, Congo, Zaire, Ethiopia, Guinea-Bissau, Madagascar, Rwanda, Mayor, and Cayman, Hong Kong, Abu Dhabi, Qatar, Yugoslavia, Crete, Mauritania, then Transylvania, Monaco, Liechtenstein, Malta, and Palestine, Fiji, Australia, Sudan.
That was just great. And as as much risque as this show was, it did balance out with the educational stuff.
Yeah, and as the teacher of the group, I do have to admit that I do offer this as extra credit. We actually watched the video in class, and anyone that can sing that song flawlessly does get extra credit. So I love the educational songs like this one and a couple others that we'll talk about here in a bit. Looking at some of the stuff heading into this episode, I do have to admit I was watching some of these skits and some of the stuff on YouTube. I kind of got sidetracked, and if you haven't done this, you should. If you're an Animaniacs fan or if you're a fan of that song, you got to go to YouTube and do a search, not for the animated version of the song, but do a search for Rob Paulsen doing it live. And it's just absolutely hilarious to watch his facial expressions and the things he does while he's doing that, because everywhere he goes, he gets asked to do that song, and he can just rattle it off like nothing, which I think is very impressive, because I've never really tried to do it, but I can imagine that once I got to Africa, I would crash and burn, and I think that's what made it so funny. You get this thing, and it's going fast,
yeah.
It's going fast, and then it gets to Africa, and it just like
yeah, exactly.
goes even faster.
He actually does it on the DVD.
That's complete craziness.
He what?
His facial expressions look tiring? Does his facial expressions look tiring?
No, he just does these crazy eyes that like look like he's going in. Well, sometimes it looks like he's tiring. Sometimes it looks like he's actually insane. And then he does like the little accents a couple times. It's impressive. I've seen it from like three different interviews that he's doing where he busts out into it, and it's just amazing to watch.
Well, on the DVD set, he also does a little bit of it, and then I think they actually go into it.
They actually go ahead, Kevin.
I was just saying, on the educational thing, we also had the U.S. states and capitals. We had all the presidents. We had, you know, so many things that if a kid could pick that up and if the kid uses that and learns something from it, I mean, there's a definite bonus from, like you said, the educational standpoint of the cartoon.
There very much was. And I think that's good. I mean, there wasn't many cartoons then, and there's not many cartoons now that offer an educational standpoint.
Reword that statement.
Well,
I'm
saying back then and now.
I'm not talking about back then. I'm talking about now, just in general.
Yeah, Animaniacs, so I think I can only think of one other. I mean, you have to go to Schoolhouse Rock to get anything even close.
Yeah.
To have the education.
As far as the music goes, I said before, it's a very much a musical cartoon. One original score in almost every episode. They had a 40-piece orchestra. The music was composed by Richard Stone and assistant composers Steve and Julie Bernstein. Steve and Julie are actually on the DVD set in, I believe, in the voice version, in the voice special, and they're talking about it. And they were actually going for a Carl Stalling type of the music follows the action.
Right. And that kind of brings up an interesting trivia note that we didn't say in the first time, but that not only were they going for that, but they used the same audio.
Yes, they did.
I'm sorry, the same studio and piano that Carl Stalling used.
Yes.
So that's kind of interesting.
Well, there's one, you know, you were talking about what your favorite episode was, and I got to go back to it. I don't know the title. It's when Slappy is driving.
Yep.
And they use the Little Old Lady from Pasadena tune. I thought that was pretty funny. And then at the end, you see her getting dragged off by the police. And, you know, before she gets dragged off, you see her put her car in the garage. And she looks at the camera and says, and I never took a lesson in my entire life. It was pretty funny.
And another thing that we... can't go without mentioning. I know we talked about her in the early on when we were talking about voice casting, but this is where Bernadette Peters came in huge too. She could take the most complicated songs and you could give it to Rita, and
we
had the Broadway voice there that could handle that, so that was huge.
Yes, it was. I thought Bernadette did a very good job as Rita.
And it was just very, very, you know, she did a very, very good role and very, very, she was just very, very well rehearsed for this role. And it was very, you know, good to hear her doing the voice of Rita. It's probably best that she was the one chosen.
Very much so.
Over the original.
Animaniacs had a variety of music types. Many Animaniacs songs were parodies of classical or folk music with an educational twist, such as Wacko's America, which listed all the states in U.S. and the U.S. capitals to the tune of Turkey and the Straw. Another song titled The President's Name, which we already kind of mentioned, U.S. President to the tune of Cavalry Charge, segment of William Tell Overture. Oh, crap. Okay, take over, damn it, stupid.
He also had some non-educational songs as well, simple parodies of other songs like Slippin' on the Ice, a parody of Singin' in the Rain, songs mocking things in everyday life such as Be Careful What You Eat, that made fun of all the ingredients in junk food, songs making fun of celebrities and other media such as the Video Review, which listed movie stars and films. And most of the show's songs were sung by the Warners, as far as, you know, Wacko, Yakko, and Dot. You had Pinky and Brain doing occasional songs, and obviously, like I said, we had Rita.
And I will play, if I can find it here, I will play Wacko's America.
The United States for 500. The Daily Double. Wacko, you can wager all or part of your money.
I'll blow the wad.
All right, then. In the category of the United answer is...
It is... Damn it. Crap. No,
dead silence.
Try that. Take two. We did the... We're doing the episode twice, so let's do the song twice.
Okay, let's see.
The United States for 500.
There it is.
The Daily Double. Wacko, you can wager all or part of your money.
I'll blow the wad.
All right, then. In the category of the United States, the answer is... The names of all 50 states and their capitals.
Okay. Here goes.
Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Columbus is the capital of Ohio. There's Montgomery, Alabama, south of Helena, Montana. Then there's Denver, Colorado, and Boise, Idaho. Texas has Austin, then we go north to Massachusetts, Boston, and Albany, New York. Tallahassee, Florida, and Washington, D.C. Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Nashville, Tennessee. Elvis used to hang out there a lot, you know. Trenton's in New Jersey, north of Jefferson, Missouri. You got Richmond in Virginia, South Dakota has Pierre. Harrisburg's in Pennsylvania, and Augusta's up in Maine. And here is Providence, Rhode Island, next to Dover, Delaware. Concord, New Hampshire, just a quick jaunt to Montpelier, which is up in Vermont. Hartford's in Connecticut, so pretty in the fall. And Kansas has Topeka, Minnesota has St. Paul. Juneau's in Alaska, and there's Lincoln in Nebraska, and it's Raleigh out in North Carolina, and then there's Madison, Wisconsin, and Olympia in Washington, Phoenix, Arizona, and Lansing, Michigan. Here's Honolulu, Hawaii's a joy, Jackson, Mississippi, and Springfield, Illinois, South Carolina with Columbia down the way, and Annapolis and Maryland on Chesapeake Bay. They have wonderful clam chowder. Cheyenne is in Wyoming, and perhaps you make your home in Salt Lake City out in Utah where the buffalo roam. Atlanta's down in Georgia, and there's Bismarck, North Dakota. And you can live in Frankfort in your old Kentucky home. Salem in Oregon, from there we join. Little Rock in Arkansas, Iowa's got Des Moines. Sacramento, California, Oklahoma, and its city. Charleston, West Virginia, and Nevada, Carson City. That's all the capitals there are.
I would just like to point out that if you listen to the CD and the TV version, they take the TV version and mix it onto the CD.
Okay.
They take the singing track and then just mix it with the music.
I don't know.
It's like they re-record the music track, but they take the singing, you know, verses.
Mike, you got to explain the buzzer at the end.
Oh, yeah. I meant to get the whole thing, but I wanted to end it on the buzzer. They were doing... The whole point of the episode was they were in school with Miss Flamiel, and they were doing Jeopardy for their categories for their lesson that day. And Wacko, as we heard in the beginning, he blew the wad, meaning he... insert bad joke there. But anyway, he went for it.
Back to Wayne Film Productions.
he went for the full,
produced by Warner Adult.
Yes, exactly. He went for a full Daily Double, and because he didn't answer in the form of a question, he lost.
So even with that song, yes. He lost.
Yeah, because you'd have to say
what is or what are. Yeah, what is or what are.
What is or what are, and then the 50 states.
Yeah, you can't just remember 50 states and capitals. You got to remember those.
Exactly.
before we get too far completed with the music segment, we have to mention obviously the theme song, which did win an Emmy Award, and I'll get this out of the way because you're going to be hearing me reference this multiple times throughout the lifespan of Tooncast. But when I was in college, I got crazy obsessed with cartoon theme songs. I listened to over 400 different shows and their theme songs, one after the other, and kind of went through a whole thing, created two different CDs. One of them was 1980 through 1995, which had – I listed the top 70 from that time period, and I put in Animaniacs at number 8, but obviously a lot of people would put it higher. It won the Emmy, and I think the best thing about the theme song was the alternate ending.
Oh, yeah, they changed constantly. The actual intro that people will hear at the beginning of this show, I believe Dot says, and here's the show's namey, but there was tons of other stuff. There was tons of different ones that they did. It was just crazy.
Trying to think of some of them. Dion, you got some of those endings?
Let's see. Here's the show's namey. Eisenhower Maney. Chicken Chow Maney.
Pinky and the Brainy.
Pinky and the Brainy. let's see. Some of them were reused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's one where Yakko just stands there at the camera and goes, because he couldn't think of what the hell to say. let's see. Andromeda Strainy is one. Oh my gosh. I call Urbaney.
Yeah.
I can't think of all of them. Dude, I'd have
That's
to look
awesome.
And see. That'd be funny if there was like a video of just random Animaniacs endings, and I'm sure there is.
They should just do the whole song and then do every ending.
Every ending I've ever used.
Awesome.
I mean, because I'm trying to think of some of them and I cannot.
The series, actually, the theme song itself, Richard Stone composed the music for the title sequence, and Tom Ruger wrote the lyrics. And several Animaniacs albums and sing-along VHS tapes were released, including the CDs Animaniacs, Yakko's World, and Variety Pack. The tape Animaniacs Sing Along Yakko's World. And there was tons of other Animaniacs CDs. The music for the show, like I said before, it's very, both this and Tiny Toons, it's very Looney Tunes-esque. And I do like that. I like having, seeing a cartoon with these characters that, especially Buttons and Mindy, I mean, the Buttons cartoons were probably, Buttons is basically a dog version of Wile E. Coyote. That's what he is. And it was just super awesome to see the music go along with the cartoon.
Yeah.
Did you grab any of the bad dog?
No, I did not. But I believe, which we have not mentioned yet, which is, Mime Time and this.
It's time for another good idea, bad idea.
Those segments were always so funny. The Mime Time really doesn't lend to audio. I mean, I could use the it's Mime Time and then, this was Mime Time, but I mean, the actual, what you see on screen, it doesn't really play out for an audio podcast because there's no sound, obviously, except like a loud crunching sound from an anvil or something. And that's something else we haven't brought up.
That or football.
Yeah. Well, there's something else we haven't brought up. The over and the ever loving use of anvils in this show. I mean, they use an anvil for anything and everything.
Yeah. Darn violence.
Yes, yes. Let's see what else. I think we can hit on to the popularity, unless you guys have anything else to say about the music.
No, I'm
it's
good.
The King of Emilania.
And the Lady. Oh, yeah.
Yes. I was up.
I was going to get one, but I figured it would put the listeners to sleep.
I was almost going to do it and send it to you and go, here, play this.
Yeah.
It's only 30 seconds.
heading into the response the show got, we said this was a huge a show for Fox originally, and it did receive ratings higher than its competitors usually. We'll get into a little bit to the awards it ran, but going into the ratings, we mentioned second most popular children's show in both children ages 2 to 11, or if you take the 6 to 11 bracket. And it helped bring Fox Kids ratings much larger than most of its competitors. For instance, November 1993, Animaniacs and Tiny Toons together almost doubled the ratings of Darkwing Duck and Goof Troop. And we had about a million, children or adults viewing every week. So that's huge.
Exactly. I'm going to say that's huge a few more times. In LA,
Well, it's what
was it?
Furthermore, the series gained high ratings under disadvantageous circumstances. During November 1993, the Dallas Fox affiliate had a three-day transmitter failure. In this time period, 11,000 homes tuned into the blank screen during the Animaniacs time slot, which was almost double the rating of the rival KXTX-TV children's show. Yes, very much.
So bizarre.
Yes. That is weird. Hey, let's watch a black screen.
Going back up just a little bit to reiterate the adult angle, there's some stats that showed that about 21% or 23%, depending on what time of the week you were looking at, of the viewers were 25 years or older. So you're looking at almost a fifth to almost a fourth of the viewers of the show being 25 years or older. So obviously they were successful with trying to aim that at that adult fan base, or even just the older kids group. Remember, they're trying to keep the same audience that tuned in for Tiny Toons, which by this point has aged a couple. You know, they're all getting a couple years older, so they were trying to keep that.
Oh yes, very much so.
As well. And one thing that we kind of briefly mentioned the first time, I want to actually go a little bit more into it this time, was the fan base leading to one of these almost cult culture followings. And it was about the same time that we really have the internet getting going, you know, with these different groups of fan bases. And this is one of the first ones. I mean, we have obviously everybody that's listening to this is probably part of some type of fan base out there, whether it be Transformers. I know you guys with the Knight Riders, different comic books or whatever you got. And Animaniacs was one of the very first ones as far as on the internet. And it talks about how the online popularity of the show did not go unnoticed from the show's producer. And actually 20 of the most active participants in some of the things, the newsgroups and stuff like that, were invited to the Warner Brothers Animation Studios to have
Yeah, and I thought that was really, really cool of them to do that.
That was cool. I read about that.
Ironically, they got a sneak preview of a sketch called Please, Please, Please Get a Life Foundation.
Yeah. It should be noted, kind of going into the nominations and awards, the first major award came in 1993, its very first season, when the series won a Peabody Award. In 1994, it was nominated for two Annie Awards for Best Animated Television Program and the other for Best Achievement for Voice Acting, Frank Welker. Animaniacs also won two Daytime Emmy Awards, which I think it's awesome that Daytime Emmys, I mean, you know, recognized cartoons.
Yeah. And I think the educational and the musical element really helped that out.
I think that with as many parodies and as much music as there was in this show, you could not.
Oh no, not at all.
No.
With as many, especially, and as not to mention the gags too.
right.
You know, the visual gags or the audio gags, you know.
Go ahead.
You could not look away. You would look and you'd be like, okay, I don't want to watch this anymore. You'd have the remote in your hand and you put the remote down, you sit down, you watch at least 30 minutes of it, you know, 22 to 30 minutes of it, you know, depending on how long it ran, and you found out probably after one episode,
yep.
You know, I'm a fan. Mm-hmm. And that was what cartoons were back then. You'd watch it and you thought, okay, this is so stupid, and you come back for more. That's what Animaniacs was about to me, and that's why I love the show, because the gags that they did, they took old gags and made them new again, or they expanded on them, and that's what made the show funny.
Yeah. I have to sound like another ooh, Ron Paulson fanboy moment. there was only two actors that were basically nominated for awards in the show, Tress McNeil and Rob Paulson twice for Annie Awards for voice acting in the field of animation, so that was pretty impressive too.
I really wish they had gotten the other actors and actresses nominated though, because it was just more than those two, and I think everybody knew that, but it was kind of like it's almost like they were looking at the most popular.
Well,
ones
actually,
in the class.
Kevin's wrong. The so, teacher is wrong.
Well, which part am I wrong on?
Wrong. Yeah, I know.
Wrong.
I wish I got that. But anyway, according to the Volume 1 DVD set, Animaniacs Live, Maurice LaMarche, Annie Award-winning voice of the brain, interviews Animaniac pals via satellite as they recount. Yes, you are wrong. You didn't say Maurice LaMarche. You said
Rob Paulson. No, he was an Annie Award winner, not for his work on Animaniacs.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's in the semantics. He was an Annie Award winner, but not
whatever.
In
Shut
Animaniacs. right.
Wrong.
Shut the hell up.
Yay. The teacher's never wrong. You should have learned that a long time ago. Twice in one episode.
But yeah, I mean, just the overall response to this show was really, really awesome.
It was great.
No, there's so many of them.
There's so many.
In 2009, IGN named Animaniacs the 17th best animated television series. Christ, I can't talk.
Which is impressive.
Oh yeah, right.
I mean, it should have been higher, but it's still impressive.
Well, it's amazing that it even made the top 20.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, it made it to 17, so
that's true.
There you
go. Can't complain. And we'll get some more of those statistics as we go through our episodes. We'll let you know where, like next week when we do Tiny Toons, we'll let you know where they fell into, and hopefully we'll
as long as it's on Wiki,
other cartoons.
That's where we.
I'm actually gonna get the entire list here.
Well, no, I know, but
tomorrow,
that's what I'm
so
saying.
For
everything that I looked up on Wiki so far for the episodes that we've done, especially the Nintendo episode because it was a multiple show episode. They had a note for IGN in almost every one of those, I think.
Okay.
IGN was probably, I think IGN's pretty good with nominating because they'll put a show where it needs to be respectfully. If it's a good show, they'll rate it high. If it's a bad show, they'll give it a sucky rating. So,
I think that kind of brings us into where you can get Animaniac stuff, what you can see, what's available out there if you're a big fan, whether it's what films were out there, what books, comic books, toys, video games.
Currently there are 3 DVD volumes. The fourth is to be announced. I have not heard or seen any news about it. There is VHS videos were released in the United States and the United Kingdom. All of those videos are now out of production, but are still available on online sellers. The episodes featured are jumbled at random and are not in any particular order with the series. But yeah, there is 3 DVD volumes. There was some print. It did have a comic book published by DC that ran from 95 to 2000. And there was a bunch of other stuff. I mean, the video games itself, they had tons of video games based on the series. Early notable games include Playzone's PC game, Animaniacs Game Pack, Konami's Animaniacs for Super Nintendo, Animaniacs The Great Edgar Hunt, Animaniacs Lights, Camera, Action. I mean, there's just tons of merchandise. And this also goes back into WB and Disney crossing over with their stores. Like, I remember back in those days when the WB store and the Disney store just first started out, it was a huge hit with everybody. I mean, you could not go into a mall with a WB or Disney store and not go into that store without being mauled by people trying to get all the stuff that they had.
I got a question for you real quick, though. I don't currently have the DVDs, and I'm assuming, I don't know if, how much of them you've watched recently, but could you just comment? Just
The first volume has one special feature, which I think they should put more, but it has the Animaniacs Live. It's a voice actor thing with Maurice LaMarche interviewing Paulson, McNeil, and Harnell. Volume 2 has one thing. The writers flip. They have no script. Maurice LaMarche leads a writer's discussion of favorite episodes. And then Volume 3 has... It's not the craziness. They can't help it if they're cute. They're just drawn that way, which is meet the character designers, storyboard artists, art directors who give life and lunacy to Wacko, Yakko, and Dot. And then there's another one on there. They're totally insane-y in cadence with Richard Stone. The music of Animaniacs highlighted by a tribute to the late composer.
How many of those
I've watched the writer's one and the voice one. I have not watched the music one yet. I don't remember. It's if you're an Animaniacs fan, it's worth getting on DVD. Just because you don't have to go to fucking YouTube and watch low quality crap.
Convert it as high
yeah,
as you can get it.
It's just good to have them. Just because, you know, if you're, you know, a fan of the show, and, you know, the last 24 episodes, or I think it's 24, 25, will be coming out eventually. We don't know.
Hopefully. But there hasn't been any news since 2007, so we're keeping our fingers crossed. But hopefully we can...
I wish they would release Wacko's Wish on DVD. It's on VHS, but I wish they would release it on DVD, and I'm sure that people that are bootleggers... You know, they'll get it that way, but I think it should officially be released on Home Warner Video.
Yeah, you can
maybe
always hope.
Maybe it'll be part of Volume 4. You can always hope. But hopefully we can do that. I know we won't necessarily have every DVD that's released for all the episodes that we're doing, but for the ones we do, hopefully we can give a little, you know, a heads up, a little, not a whole review, but just a couple
of yeah, most definitely.
Features that are available.
I think the show that we're going to have the most problem with, even though there's probably wiki information on it, and I know you know what I'm talking about, is Mask. Mask is not on DVD anywhere.
But we cannot.
No, it is not.
But we can't miss an episode on
that. Yeah,
so we'll
I really don't
want
to have
to
watch
work.
YouTube clips. I mean, I remember the show. It's not that I don't remember it. It's just even though Tooncast is supposed to be like an overall discussion and kind of, you know, a reminiscing of all the shows that we're going to be talking about, I still like to at least watch and refresh.
It gives you a reason to pull that DVD off the shelf and give it another watch. I know I'm looking forward to a bunch of the episodes where I can pull one of the DVDs off the two or three shelves I have of cartoon.
Look at
shows
what
and
I
give
do,
them
for,
watch,
I mean,
so.
And I mean I'm not trying to no seriously I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I have to actually watch them twice because I have to watch them for the sheer fact of enjoyment, then I have to watch them again to grab audio. But, I mean, Animaniacs, overall, the series, I would, if we were doing a rating scale, I would say it's a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, and I think, in its time period, you know, I'm a 80s super fan, I guess, because that's the golden era of cartoons for me. You can argue with me all you want, but you're not going to win. And after that golden era in the 80s, you had the 90s, which really didn't have a ton to offer cartoon-wise, especially after the first – you had a few sneaking in there, 90, 91, 92. But for the majority of the 90s, you didn't have great cartoons, and Animaniacs stands basically alone at the top.
Both of them, actually, Animaniacs and Tiny Toons. I know you don't like – I mean, I know you prefer Animaniacs,
The two of them together, without those two cartoons in the 90s,
most definitely.
Would be a complete void.
My thing is that when you've got two great cartoons back-to-back, you know, coming out like that, the Tiny Toons cartoons, which, you know, they borrowed a lot from Bugs Bunny and whatnot, and Animaniacs sometimes would borrow from a lot of the Bugs Bunny stuff, you know, and it just... They both worked. I mean, I know we'll talk about Tiny Toons next week, but they both, I'm just going to say this, they both worked. And, you know, I would definitely give the Animaniacs a 10. I mean, they had everything. It had humor. It had, you know, a bit of action, you know. It had some heart to it.
The music.
The music was wonderfully written.
Yeah, the educational aspects. You had everything.
Right, yeah, the education. Side of things, the music was wonderfully written. Though, you know, Jess, Rob, and Trez could, you know, I mean, I think they could do an album even if it weren't cartoon related. But you know,
I'm actually surprised that it didn't last a little bit longer.
I thought it would have at least lasted until 99 to 2000.
Yeah,
but, you know,
I mean, it lasted a long time.
Thank you, WB, for screwing that up.
Yeah, I mean, it did last a while, and it was about at the average lifespan or so of most cartoons, not all of them. But, you know, a lot of the cartoons we're looking at, they were ended for certain reasons. Either the ratings dropped, another show came along that took over. We had all kinds of cartoons get axed in those first 2 years of the 90s when curse all the networks. But Animaniacs was
damn
a survivor.
Damn you, Fox!
But Animaniacs was after that. And there really wasn't any specific thing that took it out, I can't find.
I think that they should have at least done one more episode before they were canceled. I think they could have at least made it to 100, then canceled, and then it would have been all good. But, you know, for as many as they had running, you know, you get 99 episodes.
Yeah.
What more can you ask for as a fan?
That's true. And I think this will make Mike happy, even though I'm a huge fan of Pinky and the Brain. You had Tiny Toons, you know, it kind of ran its course. They kind of piggybacked that into the Animaniacs, which then transferred into the Pinky and the Brain, and maybe Pinky and the Brain killed the whole thing. I love Pinky and the Brain, though.
I like Pinky and the Brain to a point, but I don't know if a spinoff show was such a good idea. Because, and I say
I think they
that,
were trying to just keep it alive.
Well, yeah, not only that, it's the same thing that they were doing in the Animaniacs. So not only did you see them in the Animaniacs, you saw them in their own show, and it's kind of like, okay, this, you know, it's the same, it's an Animaniacs.
Yeah, I've often posed the question, the entire run, both on Animaniacs and the Pinky and the Brain show, did they ever actually succeed? And as far as I can tell, no, they never did. And Pinky and the Brain has got to be the biggest running gag throughout both series because they never succeed. It's always something to where they,
right.
You know, the one episode
if Pinky doesn't foul it up, Brain fouls it up. If Brain doesn't foul it up, Pinky fouls it up. If neither one of
that's the perfect part of cartoons. That's the joy of cartoons and the frustration, though. I mean, you get that with, you know, you got that with Wile E. Coyote. You get that with about every other cartoon that
right,
you can.
Right, but if neither one of them on their own fouled it up, it was both of them, and it was like, okay,
yeah, exactly.
We're seeing this. Why?
The same reason we watched, you know, every G.I. Joe and Transformers and all of them. They never, you know, the bad guys never ended up winning, or you know, the goal was never achieved because
they came
to keep
pretty close.
But
what do you
I did, however, enjoy really much.
Yeah.
Even though Wacko's Wish is not on DVD, it is shown multiple times on HBO every now and then. I've seen it. It's usually on HBO Family. I did like the continuity that they did between the show, between Animaniacs, Pinky and the Brain, and Wacko's Wish. they took Pinky and Farfignugan into the movie. Yeah, so it was cool that they were going for an overall continuity thing in some aspect of the cartoon. So, yes, I think on that note, does anybody else have any other thoughts?
No, I think I'm good. This is the best of the best for the 90s. And
I don't know. Even though this will probably be put into its own podcast, but I would believe that Wolverine and some of the X-Men would disagree with you. But anyway, so we're going to close this out. That's all for this episode of Tooncast. Please join us next time when we will be discussing Tiny Toon Adventures. If you'd like to send any feedback, there are several ways to do this. The first is you can visit the www.geekcastradio.com and comment through Facebook. I am not sure. I still have not had a chance to ask Steve if he has got that up and running yet. But you can still go to the website and look at all the other shows that we have. The second is you can follow us on Twitter. The name for the actual podcast on Twitter is GCRN Tooncast. And what are your all's Twitter information?
You can get me on Twitter on Boss K-Dog.
Mine
yes,
is the
and Kevin actually remembered his Twitter name this time. I know, ain't it though?
It's amazing.
Kevin, did you add me on Twitter? I think you did.
Third is yes, you can see our forum topics at predaconempire.com/CafeSpark. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
Professor Boss K-Dog.
And we'd like to thank you for listening. Until next time.